Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. I have three guests today. Doug Ullman, who's CEO of the Lance Armstrong Foundation, is joining us by telephone from Austin, Texas, and in the studio with me today is Shelley Romer. She's the program director for Alaska Cancer Care Alliance, and also in the studio is Julia Thorsness. She's the program coordinator with the Division of Public Health's Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion Program and runs the Comprehensive Cancer Control Program. We'll be discussing some of the new scenery, the new way things are playing out with cancer survivorship. If you've got an important story about cancer survivorship, if you've got questions or comments about what you hear today, here's a couple of ways you can reach us during the next hour. Our local number in Anchorage is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Shelley and Julia, welcome, along with Doug, to Line One.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Doug, you, I understand, have a rather interesting story about cancer survivorship, and if you don't mind, since I also have failed to mention, you're going to be with us only for about the first half of this program. If you don't mind, if we start with you, and let me ask you about your encounter with cancer, and then we'll move on perhaps to talk about the Lance Armstrong Foundation a little bit.
Absolutely. Well, again, I appreciate the opportunity to join you and Julia and Shelley. You know, I was diagnosed with cancer at a very early age. I was 19 years old, and as most 19-year-olds, I was experiencing, you know, my college years and growing independent and developing my own sort of life skills when all of a sudden I ended up in the emergency room for what seemed to be an asthmatic event, and one diagnostic led to another, and ultimately I was diagnosed with a very rare tumor called chondrosarcoma, and that started me down a process that I wouldn't wish on anyone, but it was definitely a process that taught me a lot at a very early age. And subsequent to that, I was diagnosed with two different types of melanoma. All within a year, I was diagnosed with three different cancers, and I feel very fortunate to have been diagnosed early, and very fortunate to have had great medical care, great family and friends, and yet there was still so much missing from a true cancer survivorship standpoint.
What do you mean missing from a true survivorship standpoint?
Well, you know, I felt like I had great resources, great medical teams, great friends and family, and yet there were things missing. There were things missing, such as other survivors to connect with. This was almost 15 years ago, and I couldn't find other young adults my age who could talk to me about how difficult their experience had been and things that I could learn from their experience. I also didn't understand how to navigate all of the practical and physical and emotional issues that a cancer diagnosis brings. And so the medical component is obviously one key piece to the puzzle, but there's so much more that cancer survivors and their families deal with that oftentimes go unaddressed.
Shelley, you kind of are involved with the Cancer Care Alliance and are doing a lot of navigating, as I understand it, for patients that are survivors. So I guess a little bit of what Doug is saying must ring true to you. Is that a common story?
It is, for sure. I think even though there are a lot of resources in Alaska and around the United States, it's really hard to, you know, collectively get those to newly diagnosed people, as well as even survivors post treatment. So a lot of what we do is try to consolidate that in a very efficient form and walk people through the process throughout the journey so that they're not missing out on in falling through some cracks on a lot of different issues. And a lot of what Doug had talked about are the issues that we try to address.
Mm-hmm. Doug, I hope I'm not too flippant about this, but one of the best birthday cards I ever got was sent to me by my brother-in-law on my 50th birthday, and it had kind of a little teddy bear looking guy looking in a mirror at 50, and you open the mirror, open the thing up, and he says, you know, sometimes you get up in the morning and you wonder what the hell happened here. And I kind of thinking about you and the you got a chondrosarcoma and you got two melanomas within a very short period of time. I would say, well, what the hell happened here, you know?
You definitely start to question a lot of things. And you know, it's interesting. Obviously, most people aren't thinking that they're going to be diagnosed with cancer, and I think that's even more pronounced for young people, and I was certainly in that camp. But, you know, I think a lot of people, when they're diagnosed with cancer, they ask a simple question, and that question is, why me?
Mm-hmm.
And for many people, we don't know, and we may never know. And I always encourage people to move through that phase as quickly as possible, because it's so much less productive to sit around and think about that. But I will tell you quite candidly that after a second diagnosis and a third diagnosis, you really start to question why me. And
right.
And again, there are positives that have come from it undoubtedly, but I wouldn't wish that experience on anyone.
Another thing I've heard, and I have to say this may be more from interactions through the TV and may not be real, is that people who have survived wars and airplane crashes and so forth often begin to also feel a little bit wondering about why me, why did I survive when others haven't? And obviously you're the CEO of the Lance Armstrong Foundation right now, so you've had since 19, I'm going to assume, a couple of years under your belt, and you must be a true, relatively long-term survivor. And do you have any why me on the other side of this? What, you know, a feeling that I survived and others haven't?
It's a good question. You know, I think in the cancer community, the term survivor and survivorship over the years has been something that's been debated and discussed at length. And part of the reason is that I think a lot of the characteristics of survivors and survivorship do translate to other life experiences that are significant, and some of them you mentioned. So whether it's surviving a natural disaster or war, or you know, things that bring the physical, emotional, and practical realities. So you know, the other thing I would say is that cancer, while we lump hundreds of diseases under this one umbrella term, everybody's experience is different. And so while I was incredibly fortunate to be diagnosed early and to be here today, many of our friends, colleagues, neighbors, loved ones, you know, are not with us. And so that's what makes this so difficult to address, is that every single person and family impacted is a unique situation that we have to really understand and implement a plan to help them in the best possible way.
Julia, Doug is being nice enough to join us today by telephone, but one of the reasons we were having him is that my understanding he's going to be here later this summer, and perhaps this is a good time to kind of get you in the conversation and talk about that.
Sure. We're really committed to trying to bring cancer survivors together for the common good, I suppose, and to help everyone who's impacted by cancer, because it's not just the person with that particular diagnosis, but it's also the family members, the people they work with, that are also impacted by cancer. And so for the last several years, we've had a survivorship summit, and our lead agency and partner is the Lance Armstrong Foundation, and we're calling it Alaska Live Cancer Summit. I know, Doug. Sorry about that.
No, don't worry.
And really bringing together all the different partners in one place so that someone can go through and get some really good information if maybe they don't really have a place to go. So partners from the Providence Cancer Center to Alaska Regional Hospital, the American Cancer Society, all of the Women Listen, which is a great cancer support group, Us Too for men, all ages, Alaska Boob Check, we everything, stupidcancer.com will have information so that hopefully we can find a match in that big group where people can find something in common and get some good information. There's great resources locally, but there's also important resources online as well. And I really resonated with what Doug was saying in terms of everybody's unique. Everybody has a story, and sometimes people who have a less common cancer diagnosis feel overwhelmed by the number of pieces of information that's out there about breast cancer, for example, and really feel diminished because their cancer maybe is not as important. So all those different kinds of opinions, hopefully we can all roll it together and be out at the Kincaid Chalet on that Saturday, August 13th.
And Julia, I just wanted to remind her about Julia's representing the state of Alaska. She works for the Comprehensive Cancer Control Program, the Division of Public Health. Let me remind listeners again, if you've got questions or comments or stories to tell, please don't hesitate to give us a call during the next 40-50 minutes or so. Our local number, 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Coincidentally, I've mentioned to both Shelley and Julia that I am a pediatrician in practice still, and just recently before or after I learned that we were going to be doing this program, I recently had a rare occurrence in my practice. Fortunately, a young five-year-old was recently diagnosed with cancer, leukemia. And that's one of the original good stories about cancer survivorship that I would hope the public understands. Doug, any, or Julia, any comments on leukemia in childhood and survivorship?
I guess I was waiting, but I'll go ahead. Just a quick thought. It is. It's one of the great success stories that really has moved cancer away from being disease-driven and a scary word to really a chronic disease. It's something that people are living with for a long time, and so it's imperative that we learn how to support those families and those individuals so that long-term they have what they need. We talk about a survivorship care plan, and that is very specifically for everyone to really understand what needs to be happening 5 years out, 7 years out, 10 years out, when someone shifts from an oncologist is the primary care person and moves back to a primary care provider. One of our great partners is with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and Tony Poppy comes up here, and they've got an office over at the Providence Cancer Center, and really work to support families here in Alaska.
I'll just mention, again, if you go to the alaskapublic.org website, you look up Line 1, which shouldn't be hard to do, you can find some links to the Alaska Care Cancer Care Alliance, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the Lance Armstrong Foundation, and the Division of Public Health's Comprehensive Cancer Control Program. Doug, let's take just a second and let you talk about the Lance Armstrong Foundation and where the name comes from and perhaps Lance Armstrong's cancer story, if there's no one who's aware of that at this time.
Well, I think it really dovetails nicely with what Julia was talking about. I mean, the event later this month, the Alaska Live Summit, you know, is something that I'm extremely honored and proud to be attending. And one of the reasons is because it's bringing so many groups together. And cancer is now the number one cause of death around the world, and it is complex in nature. And in order to really address it comprehensively, we have to all work together. And, you know, about 15 years ago when Lance Armstrong was diagnosed with cancer, you know, he didn't know what the organization would become, but he had an idea. And his idea was, you know what, I want to help pave the way for other people that unfortunately will go down this path in the future. And the organization started very small and started focusing on cancer research, which was natural, but evolved. And in the year 2000, you know, we started to think about what was so unique about Lance's story, and what we realized was that his story was just like everybody else. He was a young guy, shocked to get diagnosed, didn't have insurance, dealt with issues like fertility, dating, how he would tell his family and friends. I mean, a lot of the same issues that many, many people go through when they hear what some refer to as the three most feared words in the English language, you have cancer. And so the foundation decided to really focus on survivorship. How can we improve people's lives today? What programs, what services, what navigation tools can we provide? And also, what advocacy can we provide to get policies changed so that we can make life a little bit easier and smoother for these individuals and families? And so that's where our mission is really focused, on both direct service for survivors and families as well as advocacy efforts to help change policy to make the world a little bit better for the millions and millions of people around the world who are now cancer survivors, thankfully.
And just, Shelley, to bring you in again, the purpose of the Alaska Care Alliance is?
It's actually to help. We do patient navigation, so that's bringing information to newly diagnosed folks and walking them through their journey, as I mentioned before. But it's also a huge issue is to address survivorship issues. And the New Norm series is one of our initial projects that we started about a year and a half ago. And we take different organizations, different individuals from the community, oncologists, counselors, nutritionists, yoga instructors, and kind of have put together how to deal with long-term physical side effects. And a lot of that's just empowerment and, you know, kind of knowing that, you know, chemo brain is a real thing and that there are tools and it might take longer than you think to move past those side effects. We talk about nutrition and how that plays a huge role in, you know, people are looking for tools that they can proactively feel like they are, you know, keeping themselves healthy and in their survivorship. And so talking about all different ways that nutrition plays a role in that, as well as exercise. There's new programs such as oncology rehabilitation that are now, you know, part of hospitals' programs that, and we talk about why. Why is that important and how can you get jump-started into your own individual exercise program that's going to help you stay healthy, as well as, you know, there's the mental aspect. Counseling, it's huge. It's almost like a post-traumatic, you know, stress disorder for mm-hmm. some people, and there's guilt involved, and, you know, all that causes a lot of anxiety for people. So giving them relaxation tools, meditation tools, guided imagery, things that are going to lower their stress levels and therefore, you know, allow their immune systems to do their job, and that's to stay cancer-free.
You know, you entitled that program is the New Norm, and I'm assuming that comes from the idea that that there is now a significant amount of survivorship going on, and that everyone doesn't know that that's the possibility.
Yeah, it's true. It's a whole new issue because there is that many more survivors, and I think people think that they're going to go back to being normal. I thought I was going to go back to being normal, just get back to day-to-day life, and I found out that everything had changed, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally. There was a whole new world out there, and I had felt pretty alone at that point. Getting through the process feels like you're surviving. You're just fighting your disease, and then you kind of get, you know, you stop getting cared for as much as you were. You're not getting treatment, and there's a whole another slew of issues that you are surprised to find that you have. So.
And, you know, what Shelley was talking about also indicates that we really need to have a variety of ways we're getting this information out. We need the Lance Armstrong Foundation and their great website where you can go on and get this information, but we also need the face-to-face because, you know, a website isn't for everybody. And having Shelley's classes available right here in Anchorage, where people can stop in and participate, is really important so they can get their questions answered. And as we all know, we need to hear things more than once and in a variety of ways. So being able to hear it, see it, and then experience it by talking maybe with a peer who's gone through the same experience, it's a lot to process. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that can be the guide that helps people be successful.
Cancer is certainly a word we hear, and I'm going to say almost daily. It comes into our interactions with each other commonly, and it's not by coincidence. It's an extremely common experience now, and some of my information that when I was researching this, that there's a lifetime risk of about 1 in 2 for men and 1 in 3 for for women. So it's something that most of us, or a large percentage of us, are going to face it at one point or another. However, the statistics on survival are important. And if you don't mind, Judy, let me ask you to kind of talk about the facts on the survivorship. We've kind of talked around it in general. Do you mind sharing some of the specific information that we can say now, particularly if we can compare it with in the past?
Right. It's really made huge changes in the last years. And since 2007, the numbers of people that are surviving for at least 5 years has just greatly increased. And the easiest way, to look at this is to take a look at the top highest rates of cancer in the state of Alaska. And those are prostate cancer, breast cancer, and colon cancer. And for those of you who don't realize it, we have this very challenging issue for us because Alaska Natives have the highest rate in the whole country for colorectal cancer. And so it's a really critical issue. So for men with prostate cancer, the good news is that if it's found early, if it's localized or in regionalized, it's 100% curable. But when we aren't getting the screening done, when we aren't being aware of what our body's telling us, when it's gone further down into the stages, we're looking at a survival rate of only 30%. And that seems to be pretty consistent with breast and colon cancer as well. You know, if it's localized, breast cancer is 98%, a 5-year survival rate. But then when you go to the later stages, you're looking at only 23%. So for me, the big message is that there are a lot of people surviving cancer. There are a lot of people living longer than 5 years. And so the emphasis on quality of life is really, really critical. But the message also is catching it early. So not only, you know, the physical activity, good nutrition, don't smoke, don't use tobacco products. Those are the lifestyle changes that you can have an impact on. There's a huge importance in getting screened and being aware of this, what the screening guidelines are and what they are for your particular family, hereditary issues, and getting in and seeing your provider on a regular basis.
Let me remind our listeners once again, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. My guests today are Doug Ullman. He is the CEO of the Lance Armstrong Foundation, Shelley Romer of the Alaska Cancer Care Alliance, and Julia Thorsness, the program coordinator for the Comprehensive Cancer Control Program of the state of Alaska. If you've got comments or questions or personal experiences with cancer survivorship, please take the time to give us a call. We'd love to hear your comments and answer your questions if we can. You can also email us, as you should be aware, at line1@alaskapublic.org, our local number 550-8433. That's 550-8433, and our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. Doug, I'd like to ask you to comment, perhaps, if it's true that we're really beginning to see some improvement in longer-term survival rates, and we can talk about the quality of life perhaps a little later, but I'd like to maybe address why that may be. Are there some specific factors that contribute to this that we should be aware of?
Well, I think the good news is that survival rates are in improving and increasing. I think we all would hope that they would be moving more rapidly, just because that's our nature and our desire. I think a few reasons are probably to be credited for larger numbers of survivors in the United States, at least. And one of those is early detection and screening. I think with breast cancer and prostate cancer, we've seen the survival rates improve fairly dramatically over the last decade or two as a result of awareness around screening and early detection. I think, unfortunately, for some of the other cancers like lung cancer and pancreatic cancer, where we don't have as many good, viable screening tools for the population base, we haven't seen the results that we would all like to see. And so we've got a lot of work left to do, but the good news is there are more and more survivors alive today around the world than ever before, and I think that's what we're all striving for.
How about treatment? You know, I get the feeling that the improvements in treatment have, like with AIDS, almost to a large degree, changed many of the cancers into more of a chronic disease than a life-threatening disorder. Is that fair to say?
I think it is fair to say. I think we're making great strides on the therapy that we're seeing across the board for all types of cancers. However, I would just say that there's one statistic that I think we all need to sort of be aware of, and that is that of the 560-odd thousand people who will die this year of cancer in the United States, almost 200,000 of them would survive if we just made sure they got state-of-the-art or standard therapy. And so from our perspective at our organization, we feel like that is, one, unacceptable, and two, a real barrier that needs to be addressed. Because if we could save almost 200,000 lives by just delivering therapies that are already available on the market today, you know, we should be doing that without any additional biomedical research. So, to us, those are some of the sort of low-hanging fruit that, as a cancer community and as a country, we should be definitely addressing.
Yeah, we're getting close to the time when you're going to have to leave. So let me just pick on you again. That was a number I had not been aware of. So my first question is, what is it that's preventing people from getting to appropriate therapy? What are the factors there?
Well, there's a few. I mean, one is obviously access to care, and not only access to care, but access to care in a timely fashion. So, mostly the people in our society that we see diagnosed with advanced stage cancer are traditionally underserved populations. Those who may not typically have access to health care or doctor's visits, and those in which some of those communities might be facing a stigma associated with the disease and therefore are less likely to get screened. There are a number of reasons why, including the health care system across the country, but you know, the fact is that people should not live or die based on who they are, where they live, how much money they have, or the color of their skin. And unfortunately, in 2011, that is still taking place all around us, which again, we think is absolutely unacceptable.
We've commented on the program a couple of times about how we, and by we I mean this country, compares to other industrialized nations in quality and access to care. So it's reasonable, it seems to me, to ask, do we know how we fare in this issue of preventing preventable cancer deaths compared to other countries?
That's a good question, and I don't, off the top of my head, know. I know that if you look at survival rates in sort of the major developed countries, they are very, very similar. You know, there's some countries in Scandinavia that have higher survival rates, but just marginally so. So I'm not sure that that we have good data on that, or at least I don't have good data on that.
Okay.
But I also know that many of those countries have, you know, a very different healthcare system, which brings pros and cons.
Absolutely.
I don't pretend that it's the end-all be-all, for sure.
Well, Doug, I know you need to run, and so before we let you go, let me just give you a chance to make any final comments that you might like to make, and then after that, we're going to take our typical halfway break.
Well, I really just appreciate you focusing the show on cancer, and Julie and Shelley, for the work you're doing, thank you so much. It's critical, and I'm excited to make my first visit to Alaska and be there for the summit later this month, and to see some of our great volunteers and partners on the ground that are just truly doing amazing work, and ultimately they're making the world a better place for people who are in the throes of this experience. So it's an honor to be a part of all of this.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come up here, and then for also taking the time to join us later. It's August 13th for the Cancer Survivor Summit. So thanks again so much for joining us. And hey,
thank you.
Go take a cold shower down there.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. We'd appreciate any questions or comments about today's program by calling us at 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. After this break, we'll continue with discussions about cancer survivorship with Julia Thorsness and Shelley Romer. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcast of Line 1, Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection, and we're talking to the State of Alaska Cancer Control Program Coordinator, Julia Thorsness. We recently had Doug Ulmer on the phone from Austin, Texas. He had to leave, but he's the CEO of the Lance Armstrong Foundation. He'll be up here later this month for a Cancer Survivorship Summit, August 13th. And Shelley Romer is also in the studio with me. She's the Program Director of the Alaska Cancer Care Alliance. We're discussing the new truths about cancer survivorship. If you've got questions or comments, you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. You can give us a call locally at 550-8433. And our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And as usual, I got to remind you, if you're listening between 7 and 8 to this program on Monday night, you're listening to a recorded broadcast. So we can't answer your questions. If you've got those questions, go ahead and call or email right now. Shelley, you're a patient navigator, as we discussed earlier, with Alaska Care Cancer Care Alliance. So tell us a little bit more, if you don't mind, about your program, the new norm. What are the topics of discussion in that program?
We primarily start off with long-term physical side effects of cancers, and we address everything from surgery to oncology, chemotherapy, radiation therapy, hormone therapy. That in this class kind of is generally taught by either a physician assistant or an oncologist themselves to kind of bring that expertise into like what they're seeing on the grand scheme of things for long-term side effects, what they're seeing and what's coming out in the research. Like I had mentioned before, chemo brain used to be thought of something as an emotional and, you know, impact of the treatment and not necessarily something that was physically coming from the treatment itself. And they're now starting to recognize that, yes, it is from treatment, and that they're... So now it's nice to be able to acknowledge that, and the patient doesn't feel so much that it's something that they're just struggling with on an emotional and mental level. So those things are very empowering to hear. We also talk about nutrition, and we've had a wonderful volunteer, Dr. Babbage from Avante Medical Center, who does deal a lot with oncology-focused nutrition, and he walks through kind of getting back to your roots of nutrition and what are, you know, where he sees on the grand scheme of things nutrition in our country change and how we can prevent as well as kind of coexist with existing with the more of the Western treatment to kind of boost your immune system and keep side effects at a minimum. We also address exercise, like I had mentioned, oncology, rehab, how you could take a program or enroll in a program like that. And any survivor can do that. Cindy Decker with the Providence Oncology Rehab Center teaches that class, and she's done a wonderful job. She also teaches you how to, you know, kind of create your own exercise program outside of that for the long term, making those big lifestyle changes through baby steps, though. And then we also use many different counselors who take different twists on different therapies, whether that be guided imagery, meditation, relaxation, how our bodies respond once we've gone through something pretty traumatic, such as cancer and cancer treatment and facing death, and then, you know, how to move on into the future and really manage those thoughts and by controlling breath and many different tools. We also have rotating subjects that we've used, such as fear of reoccurrence, insomnia related, which, you know, most, it was something like 93% of people who have gone through cancer experience some kind of insomnia, yoga, movement as therapy. So I spend a lot of time with patients themselves, as well as in support groups and with local organizations, just to kind of get an idea of what our community would like to see, and try to bring that into the series as well.
Julia, some issues that come to my mind are issues related to financial aspects. Mm-hmm. I hate to use the word discrimination in jobs. Insurance raises its head in a number of ways in this. You want to share the...
Share
some of your thoughts and comments about this aspect.
About 2 years ago, we did a local survey, the first one that I'm aware of that was done in the state, of breast cancer survivors. And we used a partnership with UAA and Breast Cancer Focus, Inc., and our partnership of groups, and really delved into what was most important to folks, what were their issues. And we're just getting ready to do that again with prostate cancer survivors. And again, Lance Armstrong Foundation has done some surveys as well. It is a huge issue, and I think as an outsider looking in, it's a little bit hard to understand why finances would be that big of an issue. Most of the people maybe that we're around have health insurance, and so we figure things are covered, or there are other avenues for charity care or such. But what people don't seem to understand is, first of all, the out-of-pocket expenses. If you have a 20% deductible and you're having hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of medications that you're needing to take for over 5 years for ongoing treatment, if you want to participate in a clinical trial to have best practices and the latest cutting-edge medical care, if you are needing to not work for a period of time, if you are needing support for your children so that you can go to treatment and you're having to hire a nanny, or you're having to have grandma come live with you for a while, the cost and the financial impact on a family is longer than even the diagnosis and the treatment. It goes into that long-term survival issue as well. Another big issue that we're working on is, as we're saying, more and more people are living with cancer as more like a chronic disease, they're returning to the workplace. So when you go back to work, what does that mean? You may go back to work with a note from your doctor saying it's okay to return to work, but what does that really mean? What about your long-term memory, your recall? What about your fatigue in terms of being able to work a quote-unquote full day? And how do you negotiate that with your employer? So one of the things we're working on is an educational piece to go directly to employers so they know what's real. Because mostly what we find out is that, not quite sure how to put this, but the more we communicate it about what's going on, the better. And for many of us, there's embarrassment, there's guilt around the cancer diagnosis. So you don't want to talk about it too much, or maybe you're not talking about it necessarily to the correct people. And so that support that might come out during those first days of diagnosis or the first days of treatment, it's now 4 years, 5 years later, and you're still needing support, and you're still needing some care, and you're still needing that kind ear to listen and try to strategize how to move forward. And there's guilt, and there's concern about whether to do that or not to do that. So it's really important to me to look at this as bigger than physical side effects, emotional side effects. There's the caregiver. It's important to look at the whole family, not just the person with the diagnosis, that ripple effect into the workplace. I think the ripple effect is huge, and we have to step up. There's more and more cancer survivors above us and ahead of us, and it's all a part of us. It's a part of my family. It's a part of your family. And if I have a 1 in 3 chance in my lifetime of having that diagnosis myself, which I haven't had so far, it is more and more a part of my everyday knowledge.
Well, we've established that it appears that cancer survivorship is greater than it's been in the past. That doesn't necessarily mean for all cancers, and it doesn't even mean for individual cancers. It depends on to what extent those cancers are when they're found, to a large degree. But what about the quality of life? My thought is that many still think that it is a very uncomfortable life, and my hope is that it's a much higher quality of life. But let's ask you guys. You guys are the ones out there dealing with it. Is the quality of life better than it used to be? I'm not saying it's a honeymoon, but are drug side effects more or less? The overall impact on a person better or worse than it used to be?
I think it varies greatly. I think it varies depending on the type of cancer, the type of drugs that you're given. They are getting, like we talked about earlier, they are getting better at treating cancers, and some part of that is actually giving lower doses of things that they used to give much higher doses,
right.
and the types of, you know, nausea medication and all of, you know, a lot of the side effects are being treated better. And so I think, you know, you might see in a lot of different cancers that it is, the quality of life is a lot higher. But I think, you know, we live in a pretty comfortable society for a lot of folks. So I think we address a lot of other issues that some countries might not necessarily deal with.
I may be wrong, and I absolutely need to be corrected if that's true, but my understanding is I was thinking that there's a lot less gastrointestinal side effects, nausea, vomiting, better medications to prevent that. As you said, using lower doses. Losing your hair is still something mm-hmm. that no one likes, but is common, and that's because our gastrointestinal tract and our hair follicles are very rapidly turning over, and that's what cancer cells do. And so until we get very, very, very specific, those are still some issues that we have to address, but the efforts are being made to make that more tolerable. Is that fair to say? I don't want to overstate the point, but I do want to make sure people understand that there's a lot of work going into making those things less of an issue. Are more tolerable.
I would add also that's, you know, my words for clinical trials as well. That's why it's so important to keep moving forward and asking those questions, you know, what combinations are best. But then you run up against walls, which we are right now, of medications becoming generic, so the pharmaceutical companies are not making as much money, and so there's less of them available, so oncologists are having to make choices about treatment based on availability. And we can't forget that our state of Alaska has these huge issues with rural versus urban accessibility. And I think some people are making quality of life decisions about their treatment based on access to care. Are they willing to come and stay in Anchorage during this long treatment process, or do they choose to have a mastectomy so that they can more quickly return home to their way of life? Those are quality of life decisions that they're making, not based on best practices, not based on what science tells us is the best treatment, but based on, for themselves, quality of life, and that is being back home closer to their friends and family and their way of life. And in the state of Alaska, we have those huge issues that Doug was talking about on a world basis. We have them right here in our state.
We have a caller, Michael. I want to take your call. What can we do for you?
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'm right now surviving prostate cancer and been given a treatment called BCG. The BCG treatment seems to be pretty non-invasive, as well as the carcinoma removal that was done. I guess my question is, being it so non-invasive, what kind of future can I look for with healing in this area?
So as I understand your question, you have not, your current treatment has not been that that uncomfortable as you would have expected, and you are implying that because it hasn't been that uncomfortable that perhaps your outcome may not be as good. Is that true?
Either way, as good or not as good.
Yeah.
The treatment seems to be working fine, and I haven't missed a day's work other than the 7 days after the removal of the carcinoma.
Well, localized. Yeah, I'm the only physician here, so I'm going to try to address this. And you're bucking up against a pediatrician who's never treated prostate cancer. But I'm at the age where I'm getting screened every year, and so I'm assuming that you're getting the appropriate treatment, which I think is right. What I think I hear you, I would say, is that with localized cancer, your chance of cure is very, very, very good. And that BCG is an immune stimulant. It's being probably used to stimulate your own immune system to increase its surveillance and ability to kill cancer cells or other abnormal cells. And it doesn't necessarily have to be onerous or making you nauseated or vomiting or lose hair. So I think you shouldn't worry about the fact that it's been fairly of a benign treatment, and I suspect you're going to have a very good chance of doing extremely well.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I wanted to hear.
You may want to double check with your urologist or whoever's treating you, but I suspect I'm pretty close on that one.
You are. Yeah, you're pretty much right on, and thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck. I should mention, every time I hear and think about cancer, I can't help but think about a physician named Siddhartha Mukherjee, and somebody's going to say, what the heck is this guy talking about? Well, he just wrote a Pulitzer Prize-winning book called The Emperor of All Maladies. If you want to read a very well-written, excellent history of cancer and where we have come in the history of civilization, our understanding and treatment, and how science works, intertwined with a wonderful personal story of individuals with cancer and being treated by cancer, and how physicians and scientists have spent a lot of personal energy in trying to address this issue, as well as the politics, this would be the place to go. It would get you up to speed very quickly and a great read. It's called The Emperor of All Maladies. The author is Siddhartha Mukherjee. He's a person from India who went to Stanford and was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, then came back and studied at Boston. It's a very, very good and thorough book. Let's see, we've got a couple more callers after that advertisement. Let's go ahead and take Becky. Becky, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
All I wanted to do is just support, from a survivor's perspective, the value of the oncology rehab programs in this town.
Okay.
I know it's been stated by some of the guests, but being a survivor and having my life in a turmoil for about 9 months is when I first heard about it, and it made a huge turnaround in just dealing with everything I was dealing with. And the exercise, I attended the one at Providence. I'm sure there's others around town, but I can't stress enough how valuable that is.
Tell us about the components of the rehab program.
We've got a very unique rehab program here in Alaska. It's actually not that common across the lower 48. It's components of the program being tailored for you. I was fearful because I was in such pain that I would have issues, but each person has a program tailored for them by a nurse and a physical therapy, and in the whole 20 sessions, I never got sore, but I knew I was getting stronger. There's a stretching exercise, there's aerobic exercise, and finally we have what's pretty unique, and that's kind of a mind part of it, where we do guided imagery and or meditation. And if you've never done that before, it's pretty powerful, especially to do with a group of people that are going through similar cancer experiences. It was outstanding.
Okay. Good. Thanks for that. That's wonderful to hear, Becky, and I'm glad to hear you're doing well.
Thank you.
All right, let's take one more caller. Bill, you're on line one.
Yeah, I had LPHD, and I went to see Dr. Chung, and he is a great radiation oncologist. And after 2 years, he sat me down and he says, okay, we're not too worried about the LPHD anymore, but we are worried or a little bit concerned about what we might have given you, because they give you a massive, you know, 38.
Right. Right.
And basically, I just, you know, if anybody's listening, it's you got to get through the cure. And
right.
Then they have to check on the cure. And I'll just take right. My comment off the air. Thank you for the great show.
Yeah, thanks for the comment. So Bill's bringing up another issue, and that's the long-term consequences of treatment. Especially certain treatments, particularly in his case, radiation treatment, may lead to an increased risk. What should we, of other cancers, what should we say about that?
Great, great comment. That's why one of the big pushes for best practices is for every cancer patient to receive a survivorship care plan when they are finished with active treatment. They might be called end of treatment summary. It might be a term that you've heard. But what it does is it documents for everyone exactly what you've received in terms of dosage, number of treatments, medications that you received, so that you aren't expected when you go back home or if you have moved in the next 3 years to have to track down exactly what you have been through. And then it also kicks out exactly what kind of follow-up you should be having in terms of, is it important to double check on your heart because of some of the medications you've been on? The Lance Armstrong Foundation has a survivorship care plan where you can go in. They tell me that about 90-95% of people can fill it out themselves, that it's very common questions. If you have problems, I know that the navigators over at the Providence Cancer Care Center have sat down with people. I know Shelley has too, and nurses over at Alaska Regional, to actually go through your medical records, fill out all those forms, and it will let you know what kinds of follow-up treatments, follow-up testing, screening, surveillance you need to have. Another website that is excellent that has it is one that's called Journey Forward. And you go there, and again, it's filling in all the different medications and what your diagnosis was. Because depending on what your cancer is, certain issues, certain medications have been given to you, and those need to be tracked. Part of that is the good news, bad news. The good news is that those kinds of medications were necessary to move you down the survivorship journey and hopefully towards the cure and not a reoccurrence. But the reality is there are the impact that has happened to your body from all those things that you've been ingesting. So again, the Lance Armstrong Foundation is a great website for developing it, and also a website called Journey Forward. There's others out there, but those are the two that come to top of my mind.
Shelley, do you have other websites that may be helpful for supporting cancer survivors that we haven't mentioned that we should perhaps bring up?
There's so many websites, it's kind of hard to keep track. And that's one of the biggest problems with my job is keeping everything current and up to date. But on our website, we actually have a link to many different websites from, you know, finding out, helping you answer questions about your own diagnosis, where to find the best treatment centers, survivorship issues, side effect issues, chats from, you know, young survivors to specific different kinds of cancers. So I would suggest going there and even commenting if you have one that's useful that you've used yourself. It's a great place for a lot of different kinds of information.
To get to those sites, did you go to alaskacancercare.org?
That's correct.
Okay, Julia, how is the state of Alaska involved? We've mentioned that you're with the state of Alaska. What is it doing in the way of cancer in general?
Sure. Largely, it's through federal grants from the Center for Disease Control. They fund and support my position, which is really I facilitate bringing everybody to the table. So all the patient navigators statewide get together once a month and just share what everybody's working on, what are the big issues. We have a group that meets around clinical trials and making sure people know that they're available here at home and how important it is to at least consider participating in those. Colorectal cancer is a huge partnership, and a group of people meet monthly. The Center for Disease Control has supported three different programs, one with South Central Foundation, one up in Barrow, and one here in Anchorage with Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortiums. They call it the Epidemiology Center. And all three of them are really working hard to increase our screening rates for colorectal cancer. It's one of those beatable, preventable cancers where the survivor rate just zooms up if you're age 50 and going in for your colonoscopy or whatever your family history shows in terms of screening. So that's a large piece of it. Then there's also the Breast and Cervical Health Check program that helps with low-income people underinsured to make sure that they're getting the appropriate screening that they need to be getting. And then also following through with keeping track of the data so that when people want to write a grant or want more information, we know what's been going on. So we have the Alaska Cancer Registry as well that tracks and is able to give us the number of cancer deaths, the number of types of cancers, because in the state of Alaska, it's been the number one cause of death for many years.
Rochelle, you're on line one, and let me just remind you, we're just in our last 2 minutes here.
Okay, I'll just take a few minutes. I wanted to thank both the ladies and Doug for being on the show today, and also wanted to remind everybody that the Alaska Live Summit is very much about survivors, and we are having several survivors from the community attend, such as Dee Dee Genro, Lance Mackey, and other survivors that are bringing the things that they have decided to do post-cancer that they thoroughly enjoy. And also, Shelley's New Norm classes will be briefly discussed there as well, if anybody wants to attend a shortened version of those to see what those are like to possibly attend the longer ones later on.
Thanks very much for reminding us. Thanks.
And just to add on to Rochelle, who is a fabulous volunteer with the Lance Armstrong Foundation, thanks. Also then on Monday at the Bear Tooth, the Texas 4000, which is a big part of this, it's a group of kids or young people who are riding their bikes from Austin, Texas, here to Anchorage, Alaska, a measly 4,000 miles to raise money for cancer. They will be showing a movie, actually, about last year's ride at the Bear Tooth, and then it's going to be followed by some local colorectal cancer, they're calling it a telenova, from folks from Barrow talking about why it's important to get screened. So both of those are going on at the Bear Tooth then on Monday, August 15th. So yeah, Rochelle's right on. We hope people will come out, and it's not only for the cancer survivor as an individual, but also their whole family, or if you have a co-worker and you want to learn more about resources available in our community, we hope you'll come on out.
Well, listen, thanks so much to both of you and for Doug for joining us. Let me remind our listeners, it was Julia Thorsness who came to the program today, and she's the program coordinator with the Comprehensive Cancer Control Program of the Division of Public Health of the state of Alaska. Shelley Romer is the program director at Alaska Cancer Care Alliance, and Doug Ullman was with us for the first half of the show. He's the CEO of the Lance Armstrong Foundation. So my thanks again to each and every one of you. Why don't you join us next Monday, August 8th at 2 p.m. for the next edition of Line 1. My guest will be the medical director of the Anchorage Family Residency Program, Dr. Ann Musser, and Joan Fisher from Alaska Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center, and we'll be discussing community health centers and patient-centered medical care as a model for care.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.